My name is Ward Minnis, and you're listening to the Seven Skeletons podcast. Seven Skeletons is a limited series art experience that tells my story and the story of my family, the family of Bahamian artists that includes my father, Eddie Minnis, through the lens of our lifelong relationship with the Jehovah's Witness religion. For a transcript of this podcast with supporting images, please visit the mentalslavery.com website. You can find the link in the show notes. There you can leave a comment or feedback on this episode or on the project as a whole. You can also see the original painting that is paired with this episode. So without further ado, buckle up and sit tight. I'm bringing seven skeletons out of the family closet. This episode is Skeleton 3. It's titled, My Life as a Ghost. The hardest thing in life to learn is which bridge to cross and which to burn. David Russell. The thing I remember most about leaving the Jehovah's Witnesses was how much time it felt that I had. By removing all of their events, readings, and busyness from my schedule, it was as if I had uncovered a whole other life. When my dad, Eddie Minnis, and my sisters, Nicole and Shan, say in the Ting and Ting documentary that they spend most of their time in the witnessing work, they're not joking. Being an active Jehovah's Witness is like having a full-time job on top of your full-time job, and one where the boss expects you to put in more and more overtime. With all of that time available to me, I threw myself into my studies at the College of the Bahamas. This is the period I was referring to in the documentary when I said that I locked myself in a room and just painted. The room in question was the second floor of COB's S block, where I was doing an associate's degree in art with an unofficial minor in English with classmates and colleagues like Jace McKinney, LeVar Monroe, and Jackson Petit. I was 25, and I was a newborn. Everything was fresh, foreign, and strange. I got to celebrate my birthday and Christmas for the first time. Went to Junkanoo. Dated non-witness women. I joined Track Road Theater, where, amongst other lessons, I learned to curse. What I was learning, though, were things that most people had learned when they were in their early teens or never had to learn at all. Reminders of my past life still haunted me. Nassau is a small place, and I kept running into former friends, or, as I was trained to call them, brothers, who would no longer look me in the eye or speak to me. Each encounter was like sandpaper on my soul. Not only was I now disfellowshipped, but because I had stopped believing and could back up my non-belief, I had earned another label. Apostate. For witnesses, apostates are described as stand-ins for the devil himself. While they practice shunning of former members, they practically run away from apostates. It was like they all owed me money. 1. When my doubts about witness teachings really began to show, my family staged an intervention. My parents invited me to Luthra for a few days to talk about things. They did everything but burn sage in the house. They sympathized, shared some of their own nagging doubts. My father even said that he had come to similar conclusions as I had about certain witness doctrines. They sent me to visit a family friend in Rock Sound who was also an elder. They hoped that maybe he could get through to me. After a day of trying, he threw up his hands and said that this was my artistic nature coming out, and there was nothing he could do. At this point, it was obvious that I wasn't long for the faith. The witnesses couldn't just let me be. The elders would come as inevitably as the Terminators, and I would be thrown out. This was when my sisters cried over me, when my family begged me to shut my mouth and just fade. It felt like I was attending my own funeral. As expected, and as the Watchtower instructed, once the inevitable announcement came for me, it was as if I was suddenly dead to them. My sisters have seen me walking on the road in Nassau and press gas. My parents stopped supporting me through my studies at COB and left my maternal aunt and uncle to pick up that financial slack. None of them came to see my play, The Cabinet, when it was on at the Dundas or at the old Shirley Street Theater. None of them came to my wedding. None of them visited when any of my three children were born. 2. While my sisters have essentially cut me off, to say that my parents don't talk to me is not entirely true. It's a bit more complicated than that. What communication we do have is strained. For example, I call my parents every year on their wedding anniversary. It's one of the few things witnesses are allowed to commemorate, and sometimes that has been our only contact for the year. If there is a life event, like an accident or a hospital visit, I get a call from them to let me know about it. If I start calling too frequently, then I am told to stop. When we do talk, the conversation is cordial, as if there is nothing wrong, as long as we stick to generalities and avoid any touchy subjects. My three children, their only grandchildren, are a bone of contention. My parents have told me that the reason that they don't have a relationship with them is because of me. Apparently, I need to let them all interact without my apostate self getting in the way. In other words, I need to give them my kids, then leave the room. Now, I know the witness playbook too well to fall for that one. I don't want my kids to get even a whiff of indoctrination, so my response to that suggestion has always been a definitive, hell no. A few years ago, my mother accepted my terms and started calling the kids with me in earshot. While my father hardly ever joined in, she called about every week for almost a year, and then just suddenly stopped. We later learned that since I was involved, even in such a limited role, witness guilt had gotten the better of her. She didn't feel that she was being faithful to Jehovah. 3.
In August of 2024, I brought my tribe with me to visit Nassau and Eleuthera.
I wanted my then 9 and 6-year-old girls to get a chance to see their roots, since they were now old enough to remember things. I was beyond shocked when my parents and my sisters said that they wanted to meet us. I was even more surprised when they showed up in broad daylight and came inside. These were all unprecedented actions. For Nicole, that was the absolute first time that she had ever seen or talked to my wife or any of my children. And for Shan, it wasn't that much better. The whole thing was as awkward as you can imagine. I asked them if there was some witness rule change that would allow them to meet and visit with us, and with me, an apostate. They didn't answer. I pressed further, and my father said that they had made an exception. It took me a while, but I now think I know what that exception was all about. There is this witness bylaw that they call theocratic warfare. It allows them to lie, deceive, and bend the rules just a bit, or even talk to an apostate if doing so would make their religion look better to outsiders. The business they were likely after was removing a title card from Ting and Ting that said my kids don't know their aunts or grandparents. So having met my children ever so briefly, the text was removed as being inaccurate, and then things promptly went back to being the way they were before. Silence from the sisters and my father, and the every so often calls from my mother. I was suckered. While the few exceptions exhaust and annoy me, they do seem to confuse my extended non-witness family. Mission accomplished, I guess. It's led some of them to believe that maybe the thing blocking a reunion with my parents and sisters is me. While this might be true now, this was not always the case. I had long hoped that my family would find in themselves the power to break free from the Watchtower's grasp and join me on the outside. This hope also goes in the other direction. In the director's cut, my sister Shan says that the door is not shut for me. She continued, "Where there is life, there is always hope, and we're always hoping for the best." The best that she is referring to, and the only way that I can be a part of the family again, is for me to repent for the crime of having thoughts of my own and return to the witnesses. For over 2 decades, then, my family and I have stood on opposite sides of a ravine, each side hoping for the other to switch. I now believe that our separate and opposite hopes are delusional. It's time we all moved on. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Seven Skeletons podcast. In the next episode, I count the hidden cost of life under Jehovah's Witness authority and the price my family continues to pay. That episode is titled House Arrest and Daydreams.
If you are enjoying this podcast or finding it helpful, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a like, or even write a review on it. This can go a long way to helping other people find the program and would be greatly appreciated.
Please visit the mentalslavery.com website for bonus posts and original artwork related to this program. I'm Ward Minnis, and we'll talk more soon. Parasite.